Right, so we're reading from Matthew chapter 8, verse 1. When he came down from the mountainside, large crowds followed him. A man of leprosy came and knelt before him and said, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said. "Be clean." Immediately he was cured of his leprosy. Then Jesus said to him, "See that you don't tell anyone, but go, show yourself to the priests, and offer the gift Moses commanded as a testimony to them."
When Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him asking for help. "Lord," he said, "my servant lies at home paralyzed and in terrible suffering." Jesus said to him, "I will go and heal him." But the centurion replied, "Lord, I do not deserve to have you come under my roof, but just say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I tell this one, 'Go,' and he goes. I tell that one, 'Come,' and he comes. I say to my servant, 'Do this,' and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he was astonished and said to those following him, "I tell you the truth, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith. I say to you that many will come from the east and the west and will take their places at the feast with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the subjects of the kingdom will be thrown outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Then Jesus said to the centurion, "Go, it will be done just as you believed it would." And his servant was healed at that very hour.
When Jesus came into Peter's house, he saw Peter's mother-in-law lying in bed with a fever. He touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she got up and began to wait on him. When evening came, many who were demon-possessed were brought to him, and he drove out the spirits with the word and healed all the sick. This was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet Isaiah: "He took up our infirmities and carried our diseases."
Well, we're spending the next few months looking in some detail at Matthew chapters 8 and 9. But before we get into it, it's important to have a think about where it is and what's going on. This is called context, and it's essential whenever we read a passage that we look at what has just gone before and what comes after. It helps us to see what's going on clearly and stop taking things out of context and making them say things they're not. So if you could, please, just flick back a couple of pages to Matthew 4, verse 23. Let me read verse 23 on page 683. Says, "Jesus went throughout Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness among the people." And now, if you could just flick on couple of pages further onto Matthew 9, and let me read this verse, which comes after the chapters we're going to be looking at. Matthew 9, verse 35. "Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness." Well, the passage, the chapters we're looking at come between these two bookends. And what's going on? Well, we've seen there, Jesus is speaking as he teaches and preaches the good news of the kingdom. And Jesus is doing as he heals every disease and sickness and drives out demons. And where chapter 8 kicks off, Jesus has just finished teaching his disciples and the crowds who are also there following in what's known as the Sermon on the Mount. And if we just glance back to the end of chapter 7, just before our reading, chapter 7, verse 28, on page 686... When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority, and not as their teachers of the law. When he came down from the mountainside, large crowds followed him. This is where we are. Jesus has taught as one who has authority. And now he's going to demonstrate that authority by how he acts. And just after this section in Matthew, Jesus is asked a question about who he is. And we're just going to, sorry, we're doing a little bit of flicking just right at the start. We're just going to turn on to that as well. This is Matthew 11, verse 4 and 5. And we're going to see how, when Jesus is questioned about who he is, how he answers. Because this will, bear with me, because this will help us as we understand the chapters that we're thinking about. So Matthew 11, verse 4, Jesus replied in response to their question about who he was, "Go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cured, the deaf hear, and the dead are raised, and good news is preached to the poor." So you see, Jesus, when questioned about who he is essentially saying, look at my deeds, look at what I'm doing. Look at what I have been doing, what I've been saying. This tells you about who I am. So all these things, all these stories about the things that Jesus does are to show us who Jesus really is. So we'll look again at these stories which we had read for us, and we'll catch a glimpse of the real Jesus, who he is and what he came to do. So first then, we have a man with leprosy. We're back in Matthew 8. I promise we'll stay here in chapter 8 now for the rest of the evening. Let me read again verse 2. "A man with leprosy came and knelt before him and said, 'Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean.'" So we've heard from Bernard, we've had to think a bit about what leprosy is. And the true leprosy was a severe skin disease. I think we saw how bad it was by some of the pictures. It was no sort of man flu. Rather, it was like cancer or AIDS today. Those with a more developed form of a disease were considered as good as dead. And all who had any form of leprosy were kept separate, as it was contagious. But worse than that, they were considered ceremonially unclean, unfit for God. Lepers were banned from society and considered dangerous to be near. Coming into contact with one would make you unclean. So look then at how shocking Jesus' response is. Verse 3, Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said, "be clean." Immediately he was cured of his leprosy. Jesus is willing. He reaches out and even touches this man, this outcast. He's not afraid of what others think. He acts with purpose, with love, with compassion. You see, it's never in question whether Jesus can heal this man. He's not asked, "Are you able to?" but "Are you willing?" He can, and he does, with a word. The man is ordered off to the priest to offer the gifts that the Old Testament required so he can be officially recognized and as healed and reintegrated into society. Jesus' power can be seen by the priest. But Jesus warns him then not to tell anyone. When Jesus is revealing who he does it in his own time. Jesus is in control of all things. He doesn't want large crowds around him who are just there to see him perform a miracle. And he certainly doesn't want people to come seeing him as a sort of national liberator who's come to free people using force. Jesus' mission is so important, he doesn't want people misunderstanding it. So then the second person that we see here, a centurion's servant. Have a look down again from verse 5. "When Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him, asking for help. 'Lord,' he said, 'my servant lies at home, paralyzed and in terrible suffering.' Jesus said to him, 'I will go and heal him.'" So from one outcast to another. First the leper, now a Roman centurion and his servant. Rome were the enemy. They were outsiders to Israel, who's taken over control. The first man was socially excluded. this second person is racially excluded. But, well, excluded by society, that is, not, of course, Jesus. But the centurion comes to Jesus anyway, because the servant is suffering terribly at home. He's paralysed. And this man, of all people, recognises that Jesus has a special authority. And listen to how humbly he acknowledges Jesus' authority and how little he knows he deserves Jesus. Back down in verse 8. The centurion replied, "Lord, I do not deserve to have you come under my roof, but just say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes, and that one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." Do you see then how he recognises Jesus' authority? And he realises how unworthy he is to have Jesus come under his roof. When I was a teacher, I had authority over the classes I taught. If I told someone to take off their trainers or take their coat off, there were things our school was big on, then that's what they'd have to do. But I wasn't in total overall control, overall authority of the school. You might have an awful class which you're really struggling with, not behaving very well, and then the head would be doing one of his sort of tours of the school would come in, and the moment he came in, everyone would just be silent. And the head would never really get a true reflection of the school because of the authority that he had, because of who he was and what he could do. And just as I had authority over the class, then the head clearly had authority over me as my boss. I had to do what he said, and whether I agreed or not. The centurion knows this. He knows how authority works, and he knows that Jesus has authority to heal the servant with a word. And not only does Jesus heal the servant, he also commends the centurion for such amazing faith. If we look down again at verse 10, we'll see this. I'll read it. When Jesus heard this, he was astonished and said to those following him, "I tell you the truth, I've not found anyone in Israel with such great faith. I say to you that many will come from the east and the west and will take their places at the feast with Abraham, Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the subjects of the kingdom will be thrown outside into the darkness, where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth." In saying that he hasn't found faith like this in Israel, he's showing how his kingdom is being opened up to people of all nationalities, not just the Jewish race, who God was primarily concerned with in the Old Testament. Heaven is often described in party languages. The Bible often talks about it in terms of a feast or a banquet. And Jesus is saying that people all over the world will be invited in to join his party. Whilst many people in Israel, described here as the subjects of the kingdom, verse 12, will be thrown out into darkness. Two old friends met up who hadn't seen each other for quite a while. And the first man says to the other man, "Tell me, how is that lovely wife of yours?" "She's in heaven now," the man replies. "Oh, I am sorry to hear that," the first man replied. But then as he thought about it, he thought, "Well, sorry, heaven, that doesn't quite seem the right thing to say." "I am pleased to hear that," he corrects himself. But then he thinks about it, that's even worse, and he can't say that. So he tries again, he says, "Oh, I am surprised to hear that." Well, he was just digging a bigger hole for himself, wasn't he? But when it comes to heaven, there really will be a lot of surprises. People we thought would never be there will be. And people we thought would be there perhaps won't be. Jesus is saying this here. No one will be in heaven because of their race. It's not by who we are or where we're born or even about what we do. No, the only way to join this party that Jesus throws, heaven, is through faith in who Jesus is and in what Jesus can do for us. Faith like this centurion had. And of course, his faith is correctly placed in Jesus. We see that in verse 13. Then Jesus says to the centurion, "Go, it will be done just as you believed it would." And his servant was healed at that very hour. So we've had the leper, we've had the centurion's servant, and finally, there's a third person healed, a mother-in-law with a fever. So, down in verse 14, when Jesus came into Peter's house, he saw Peter's mother-in-law lying in bed with a fever. He touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she got up and began to wait on him. Now, I've heard it said before that Peter's the most loyal of all disciples. Why? Because Jesus healed his mother-in-law, and he still followed Jesus afterwards. Now, that's just a joke. There's absolutely no reflection I get on very well my mother-in-law. But the surprise here is not the mother-in-law part. The surprise is that Jesus heals a woman. A leper we've had first, filthy, contaminated. We've had the Roman centurion, an outcast. And now a woman who at the time was socially treated as a was socially excluded, treated as a second-class citizen. So Jesus clearly shows no kind of prejudice. And it's worth noting that the fever here is something extremely serious. And yet, again, Jesus isn't afraid to touch her. And as he does, she immediately gets up to wait on him. A fever would have usually taken a good while to recover from. But she gets up immediately. With Jesus, all things are possible. So then, this is Jesus. Do you see the authority he demonstrates? Authority over disease, sickness, death. Jesus comes into a world full of suffering and pain, a world where things aren't as they should be. And the reason death and disease are so prevalent goes way back to near the start of the Bible, Genesis 3. We see the reason is sin. As humans reject God's rule over them and disobey his commands, so there is a consequence to this. The consequence is that we live in a fallen world under God's judgment. Adam and Eve were banished from the garden God had given them to live in. Relationships were broken. Relationships between men and women. Relationships between humans and the world. And all because that essential relationship had been broken between God and his people. And by the way, this judgment is entirely deserved. It's not that this leper or Peter's mother-in-law or anyone else was being punished for any specific sins here. It doesn't say that at all. Rather, they, like every man and woman who's ever lived, have sinned by failing to live God's way. All of us have rejected God's rule at some point or other, whether in a big way or in small ways. If we look around at the world we live in, we see that things aren't right. Suffering, disease, death, disaster, war, famine. And we're reminded then that God punishes evil. He's simply too pure and perfect and holy to be able to let sin just pass him by. But the great news then is that Jesus demonstrates his authority over all kinds of disease and sickness. And as he does this, he is showing that he has authority over death too. And this means he has authority to reverse the consequences of our sin. We're going to have a little break, and we're going to see up here some symptoms. I'm just going to give you about a minute on tables and see if you can work out what the problem behind each of these symptoms is. So chat about it on your tables. You're only going to have about 1 minute. See if you can work out what's the problem behind each of these symptoms. Well, there you go. That was your minute. I wonder if we got them. The first one was supposed to be woodworm, a sort of nasty thing that goes all through your wood and sort of eats it out. Second one, head gasket. Yeah, head gasket gone in your car. And third one is, meningitis. So there you go. These, though, are examples of symptoms which all have a much bigger problem behind them, don't they? The few holes in your table is not a problem in itself. The colour of your oil is not a problem in itself. I mean, it doesn't matter if yours is pink or blue if the car works. But clearly, there's a bigger problem behind that. And again, with the last one, the sort of rash on your skin by itself isn't a particularly big problem, but what it's a symptom of clearly is. And it's like that here too. The leprosy, the fever, the suffering, they're all symptoms of this greater problem. The greatest problem of all. The problem of our sin and rejection of God causes. They show that we live in a world under God's judgment. And so just as Jesus shows he has authority to deal with the problem of suffering and death, he also shows that he has authority to deal with this problem of sin too. Matthew is showing us loud and clear who Jesus is. He's showing us that Jesus is God's long-awaited King. He's the promised Christ, who has come to bring healing and restoration. He's come to save people from the judgment that our sin deserves. So really tonight, I have one big point for us, and it's this. Jesus is God's King, who has come to reverse the effects of sin. Let me say that again. Jesus is God's King, who has come to reverse the effects of sin. I hope we've seen tonight what Matthew wants us to see. Jesus acting with power and authority. Authority to heal people from disease and sickness and death. And therefore, authority to heal people from what lies behind this. Jesus is God's King who's come to reverse the effects of sin. And we catch here a glimpse of how Jesus is going to do that. It's there in the bit, the two verses which I haven't read yet. Verse 16. When evening came, many who were demon-possessed were brought to him, and he drove out the spirits with a word and healed the sick. Then verse 17. This was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet Isaiah. He took up our infirmities and carried our diseases. Matthew quotes here from Isaiah 53 and says that what Jesus has just done shows that he fulfills this prophecy made years earlier. You see, this promised king was going to come and bring physical healing. He was, and the verses talk about that. He was going to carry people's disease away. But he was going to do more than that. And the verse, this is from in Isaiah 53, it goes on immediately to talk about this. It goes on, Jesus was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him. And by his wounds, we are healed. You see, the healing Jesus had come to bring involves him being pierced, being crushed, being wounded. And it was on the cross where this happened, where Jesus died as a punishment that brought us peace. That means he suffered the penalty that we deserved to pay for our sin. There'll be people here tonight, I'd imagine, who haven't yet accepted what Jesus did on the cross. Those who perhaps are undecided still. Let me warn you, please, that not accepting who Jesus is leaves you in a terrible place. Because it means that one day you'll have to face God's judgment, God's final judgment, by yourself. Can I strongly encourage you to make, let's be honest, what is the biggest commitment you can ever make? That decision to accept Jesus as the one who saves, not just physically, but spiritually. The one who takes away our filth, deals with it for us, and gives new life. There are many people in here, I know, who've done this, and who can testify that it is the best decision they've ever made. And for us, I hope we will see again who Jesus is, how Jesus acts with compassion, with absolute, unmistakable authority, love for the outsider, even the most socially unaccepted. Because we live in a world that is not yet perfect, as it one day will be. So we need to constantly remind ourselves that Jesus has come into the world to reverse the consequences of sin. He has the authority to do this. We need to keep trusting in the authority that Jesus has. So, elections coming up this week. But let's remember, back to the world leader we voted for at the start. Each one had flaws, didn't they? Even the ones who were good. None were perfect. But the lesson is, if we are trusting in Jesus, then we are following the one who does have ultimate authority and who will use it only for good. We don't need to look anywhere else. We can take our problems to Jesus. He wants us to. Where even great world leaders will let us down, will disappoint, Jesus won't. He has all power and authority, and all compassion and gentleness too. Let's have our hope placed in Jesus this week. Let's have a desire to share him with others as the one who will meet our greatest need, paying for our sin himself. Let's rejoice in Jesus, thank him, and keep our focus firmly on him. Jesus is God's King, who's come to reverse the effects of sin.